Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Okay, sit back and prepare to be inspired. Today on the program, we're going to learn how a local medical team from the Moran Eye Center is changing the lives of hundreds of patients in the tortured South Sudan, restoring sight to the blind as well as building bridges in the war-torn nation. Joining me in studio to talk about a recent excursion to South Sudan is Michael Yeh. He is manager of the Moran International Division, and this is his second sight-restoring medical mission to South Sudan. Michael, welcome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Also with us, Dr. Charles Weber. He's a fellow at the Moran Eye Center focusing on glaucoma, and he also went on the recent excursion. Dr. Weber, thanks to you.
Thanks.
Coming up later in the show, we'll continue our theme of inspiration with a look at the local level, social entrepreneurship by college students. But first, humanitarian efforts abroad. Have you participated in a goodwill or hands-on humanitarian assignment? Where did you go and what lessons did you take from the experience? You can join us. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Dr. Weber, I understand this was your first excursion to South Sudan?
It was.
Tell us about your first impressions. When you first got off the plane, you went to this place called Duk Payel, this region of South Sudan where there's a clinic where you worked. What did it look like? What did it smell like? Just give your first impressions of that place.
Well, from those that had went last year, I was kind of prepared for what things might be like, which is a testament to Michael and the rest of the team for preparing us well. But it was kind of what I thought it was going to be. It was dusty, hot. There was actually more water than we were expecting to see for that time of year, which was bad from a bug standpoint, but nice that it wasn't quite so dry and dusty. But more than that, it was just a lot of smiling faces that welcomed us on the airstrip after the cattle had been cleared so we could land.
The cattle, I love that. Why did you sign up for this assignment?
This is kind of a career goal of mine to be involved with international ophthalmology and care of those that don't have access to care. So it's a great way for an individual to practice medicine in a different environment and really help those in need and have an exchange of culture at the same time.
Michael Yeh, tell us a little bit about this country. South Sudan has been ripped apart for decades by civil wars and strife. The citizens recently gained independence just last year, but it's still considered a very dangerous part of the world. Why did Moran target South Sudan?
Well, we actually, during the Sundance Film Festival in 2005, a movie was screened called God Grew Tired of Us about the Lost Boys. And it followed their journey through Sudan, through refugee camps, and then they were relocated to the United States. And it kind of follows that whole story. And when John Dow, who is one of the main people they follow in the story, he shows up here at Sundance for the screening of the movie, and they had a dinner, and he happened to be talking about just the need of the people in his home village, especially. So at that dinner happened to be Ann Bagley, who is Dr. Crandall, who's the co-director of our program, and he was talking about eye care, and she said, "I know someone who can help you." And Dr. Crandall has been working in sub-Saharan Africa for over 20 years. So it started that whole process, and they met, and we made a commitment to go, but it took a while. Last year was the first year we went, largely because of conflict. You know, every time we tried to get in there, there was conflict. So they became a new country a year ago, and it was relatively peaceful, and we were able to start there. So that's how we ended up there. And John Dow had gone back and built a clinic in his village called the Lost Boys Clinic. So it gave us a place to operate out of.
Who was on the Moran team, or who is on the Moran team that went?
Well, of course, Dr. Weber, Dr. Crandall. We have Roger Furlong, who's also a physician in Montana, who was one of Dr. Crandall's original fellows 20 plus years ago too. So he went, and then we take a team of volunteers too. So we also have several nurses that go and technicians to help with screening, and then we had, you know, various other. It's a team of 15, though, so it's a pretty large group to move back and forth.
Did you ever fear for your safety?
No. It's one of those things that, I mean, it's definitely a place that's had conflict, but once you land, I mean, don't you think, Charlie? There was never an issue of security for us.
Yeah, I was quite nervous before I went, despite Michael's reassurances with everything. but once I landed, you just kind of knew that it was a place where there was enough respect for what we were doing and respect for John Dow that really no harm would come of us. And there wasn't any active conflict within the town at that time. So,
you targeted your efforts on two conditions, cataracts and something called trachoma. Maybe you can tell us about these medical conditions and what it takes to correct them.
Sure. Cataract is quite common. Virtually everybody will develop a cataract at some point in their lifetime. In the United States, we treat it when it causes a somewhat mild amount of blurring to the vision, usually enough so it makes it difficult to drive or read small print. But in South Sudan, there's no access to care, so their cataracts go to kind of end-stage cataract, which the eye turns white. That's that classic, we usually only see it in animals here, where the eye turns white and they can only see maybe a light that's in front of them.
What do you mean that no access to health care? No access.
There is one ophthalmologist that we know of in South Sudan. We tried to contact him, but we weren't able to connect on this trip.
But in the entire nation?
In the entire nation, and there's 9 million people spread out over the entire country. So there are many barriers to care, not only the lack of physicians, but transportation needs, and so that was a part of our initiative. But getting back to cataracts, so they get to the point where they have barely any perception of light, but in a relatively short surgery, we can remove the cataract, replace that cataract with an artificial lens, and they, as long as they have a healthy eye, presumably can see very, very well if things work out perfectly, 20/20. Trachoma is a little bit different. That's caused by repeated infections caused by a bacteria that causes scarring to the eyelids, and eventually the lashes turn inward, and that rubs along the cornea, the clear window of the front of the eye, and that scarring can cause a permanent loss of vision that's only curable at that point by a corneal transplant. That requires a large network of donors and ways to harvest the tissue and surgeons to provide that surgery. But if we intervene earlier enough with an eyelid surgery to turn the eyelashes back outward, then we can prevent that corneal blindness.
Speaking with Dr. Charles Weber, a fellow at the Moran Eye Center, and Michael Yeh, manager of the Moran International Division. The two are part of a team that recently returned from South Sudan on a humanitarian mission, providing sight-restoring surgeries. And we're talking about doing good abroad and here at home. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you've gone on one of these humanitarian efforts, what did you take away from the experience? And tell us about it. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. So one ophthalmologist in the entire nation of South Sudan. Are people, since they don't even have access to a doctor, do they have a sense of the potential to restore their sight? Michael Yeh?
No, I think that's one of the profound pieces of what we do. I think when they go blind because of cataracts, they think that's it. I'm going to be blind the rest of my life. And as Charlie pointed out, it's a simple surgery that we can do, and they can see perfectly within the next day. Actually, the same day we could remove their bandages, but we keep them on for a full day. So it's pretty profound. You know, it's 1 minute blind, no idea that you're going to have this surgery. And I think that in itself, if you want to talk about bravery in terms of the Sudanese people, they haven't had that medical experience that we have. So going to a doctor and the procedures that happen, let alone going and having surgery, is unbelievable, because they just walk in and trust that something's going to happen. And you can imagine being blind, being led into this place, and many of them are bilaterally blind, which means both their eyes are blind. And just coming in and having someone hold your hand and walk you through, set you on a table and tell you not to move and, you know, do something to your eye and you know something's happening to you, and then sit up and be removed and stay in the camp for the day, you know, with this patch on your eye, and then the next morning they remove the patches and they see, which is pretty incredible. For them to even go through that process, because that whole experience is new, let alone those people we flew from villages that were very remote, right, who had no idea. They were coming from places where they're staying where their enemies live, right? So that's part of our peace initiative with iCare. But that whole process I find unbelievable, that they were willing even to come and experience that, let alone get on an airplane. You know.
Dr. Weber, in your practice here, how is it different from practicing in a place where there's no exposure, previous exposure to medical care?
It's just as Michael was saying, it's hard to relate to patients what they're going through at that very moment, being blind, being led through this building past an electric fan, which maybe they've never felt before, being set down on a table and going through a surgery. But here in the United States, we have a lot of information that's readily available by the internet and access to general medical care, that patients kind of know what they're getting into, certainly a lot more than the Sudanese did while we were there.
But you didn't have to build a foundation of trust before a surgery?
Certainly we do, and each patient is carefully selected if they're a candidate for surgery or not, and still go through an informed consent process, just as we do in the United States, to let them know the risks of surgery and if they want to go through the surgery at all. There was one patient that actually turned down surgery that had only one seeing eye and didn't want to go through the risk, and that's perfectly reasonable. Mm.
So. For those patients who did choose to do it, how did they react? I mean, what did you see when they were able to see?
That was the most impressive part of the whole trip for me as a physician, was seeing these patients react once their patch is removed the day after surgery and they're able to see again. This is a culture that doesn't really show too much outward emotion. They are very stoic, and this was a turning point during the trip to see them break out in song or cheer or immediately reach across and give us a hug. So that share of human emotion is the most gratifying part as a physician on the trip, and I think for really all the volunteers.
Speaking with Dr. Charles Weber, a fellow at the Moran Eye Center, as well as Michael Yeh, the manager of the Moran International Division. The two were part of a team that recently returned from a medical aid mission to South Sudan over the holidays. And we're talking about humanitarian efforts abroad and a recent effort to bring sight to the blind living in Sudan. If you'd like to join our conversation about this mission or to share your experience providing humanitarian service somewhere in the world, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We need to take a break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and today on the program, we're speaking with part of a medical team from the Moran Eye Center, and they're joining us to talk about their recent trip to South Sudan, a nation that's been torn apart by war, recently declared independence from Sudan, and the team is going there to provide surgeries to remove cataracts and treat other eye infections, essentially restoring sight to hundreds of the Sudanese who don't have any access to health care. Joining me in studio, Dr. Charles Weber, a fellow at the Moran Eye Center, and Michael Yeh, manager of the Moran International Division. And you can join our conversation as well. We're looking for stories from those of you who have practiced service on an international scale. What was your humanitarian experience like, and how does it resonate in your life today? You can join us at 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Michael Yeh, in the previous segment, you mentioned your partnership with the John Dow Foundation, a group dedicated to improving life on the ground in South Sudan. Your team partnered with John Dow, and I'm just wondering, what is the focus of the medicine versus the building bridges part of what you were trying to accomplish there? I understand there are a number of warring tribes in the region, and John Dow is trying to use medicine as a conduit to create some common ground there.
He is, and I think that's such a visionary thought on his part, because when we went there last year, the village that he built the clinic in is largely Dinka. John is a Dinka. And there are three main tribes that have been, you know, at war basically with each other for so long, which is the Nuer and the Morle. And he doesn't want to just provide health care in the region for the Dinkas. He wants to provide health care for everyone. But when you're fighting constantly, that's just not going to happen. So his idea was, like, why don't we bring patients from each of the tribes together and kind of have a peace conference around getting your vision. I mean, it's the same. They're all blind. They're going to all see together, and we can talk about what it is to share that common experience. You know, there's lots of metaphors you could talk about, or symbolism about restoring vision and opening eyes. And that's really what was behind part of that. So we screened over 200 patients in Pibor, which is a small village outside of us that is largely the Merle, and for 25 spots, 200 people came and said, I'm willing to go to my enemy's village because I want to see. And we did that with the Nuer too. We went to two areas there and brought 23 more patients from there. So it was pretty profound. They flew in and they stayed, got their vision, and we even shared kind of what that experience is like, because the Dinka are like, wow, you brought all these people here and you're going to do their vision first. And we're like, well, we're going to do their first eye first and you'll get your eye done. And then we were able to bring them all into a circle and talk about that experience, and they all could see. And, you know, John was saying, if you guys continue to keep peace, we'll continue to offer this to everyone. It's not just here at Duke Payal that we're going to work. We're going to work to all the outlying villages. So we actually even spent a day as a team with the foundation people, John Dow's foundation, to draw out how can we expand this. If peace stays, can we really, really expand this to include all these villages to restore sight? Because South Sudan happens to be one of the most blind places in the world too. So it's pretty... You know, it's not hard to find those people willing to come a long distance, even if it's their enemy.
That's kind of a scary aspect, though. I mean, you feel like, okay, Dr. Weber, you've got a skill, and you're going to go and help people and improve their lives. And then there's this added dimension of social strife, of internal conflict, and conflicts beyond certain groups and in between groups. And do you really want to step into all that mess, Dr. Weber?
Certainly you could kind of call us naive at first glance. But I think it's so important for the country as a whole to come together as South Sudanese rather than different tribes to be able to build their new country. And this is a very, very small part of that, but a worthwhile endeavor, made more reassuring by the fact that John Dow is well-respected even amongst those other tribes. He's, I think, fairly well known throughout the country based on his efforts for his own people. And so that was reassuring from a safety standpoint, and at no point did we really feel like there was any harm that would come to those that had volunteered to come on those flights back to Duke Payal for care or to ourselves.
But, I mean, did you get that concern, Michael Yeh, when you were trying to assemble this team? Oh, by the way, we're kind of stepping into a bit of a social mess.
Absolutely. And in fact, we had talked about sending Charlie out to do some pre-screening in one of the villages, and the logistics would require him to go with just himself and a translator and somebody to help him with a little bit of the screening. And he said, I'm not necessarily really comfortable with that. And you know, as a whole, we have a responsibility for the safety of the team. So it's always there, and you never know if this is going to be as successful as it sounds, you know, when you start thinking about, wow, look at all the potential. Of course, they're going to buy into this. So that, you know, there's a little bit of disconnect there. So it ended up being the perfect story and the perfect outcomes. You couldn't even script it better because they were... When they all started hugging and shaking each other's hands, for many of them, that was the first time face-to-face that they had seen someone that they considered their enemies, right? And see that they're the same as they are. Mm-hmm. So it translates so well into kind of, you know, opening eyes and the vision piece, but it really was true. I mean, didn't you think that, Charlie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a telling part was there was a 92-year-old gentleman who donated the land for the Lost Boys Clinic. And he has many children, but I believe four of his many children had actually been killed by the neighboring tribe over, you know, they often fight over cattle or land. But he was very willing to open his clinic and his arms to these people, knowing that it was the best for the future and to prevent that from happening, and had very forward thinking approach to everything.
Probably not something you studied in medical school. We'll speak with Dr. Charles Weber, a fellow at the Moran Eye Center, and Michael Yeh, manager of the Moran International Division, talking about a recent medical aid mission to South Sudan. The two and others from the Moran Eye Center joined in on. If you'd like to join our conversation, 801-355-TALK. We're talking about humanitarian aid abroad. If you've gone on such a service excursion, tell us about it. 801-355-TALK. Is the number. This email from Glenn, who writes, ophthalmologists have extensive medical education and address numerous diseases related to the eye. Is there a way, Glenn asks, to teach the healthcare professionals that live in Sudan to deal with the major one or two eyed diseases that afflict many of the Sudanese? And Dr. Weber, I guess if you only have one ophthalmologist there, I mean, can you train other healthcare professionals who are on the ground to do some of these relatively simple but meaningful eye procedures?
Well, that's a great question. And the goal of the International Division at the Moran is to provide an exchange of education to train physicians from around the world in modern surgery. But if there isn't a physician network in place, then it becomes more of a challenge, and that's why one focus of our mission was to provide some exchange of peace or allow these tribes to communicate with one another. But as a separate part, we did make the first steps in training some of the health professionals there. There was a nurse who is from Duke Payal, plans to stay locally and work out of the John Dow Lost Boys Clinic. So part of our trachoma surgery, I was training him in the first steps, and he's not to the point that he can independently perform these eyelid surgeries to correct trachoma, but at some point he would, and then hopefully we would get to the point where we wouldn't have to go there for trachoma surgery. Mm. Cataract surgery, unfortunately, is much more complex, takes years of training, and that would be a harder skill transfer, but hopefully we can find physicians that are there willing to relocate to South Sudan, maybe other South Sudanese ophthalmologists, and train them or improve their skills in cataract surgery.
Did you get a sense that there is some interest? You know, people want to learn how to do this so that they can practice the medicine themselves.
Certainly, yeah. They have an incredible team that's there year-round at the John Dow Lost Boys Clinic providing general medical care, and they see these patients come in frequently, and once we're able to transfer those skills to them, they'll be able to treat them independently.
Glenn, thanks very much for the email. You can send your emails to cityviews@kcpw.org or call us. 801-355-TALK is our number. How has the South Sudanese government, it's still in its infancy, how have they sort of chimed in on what you're doing there? Have they given you any kind of reaction?
They have, actually. John Dow reached out to them early in this process, when we started over a year ago to talk about it, we made a 5-year commitment to return each year, and again speaks well to what Charlie was talking about, which is hopefully getting them some locals, healthcare workers trained enough to do some sustainable eye care there. But he did get the government involved, and we had the health minister there, and we had the regional governors there. They all support this because internally, that kind of civil war that's been happening between the tribes, it keeps them at war. Mm-hmm. Even if they were to resolve all the problems between Sudan and South Sudan, they still have internal conflict. So they're very much in support of that, and they're helping us reach out to potential partners that we can help, reach out further in terms of our eye care, but get more of the Sudanese involved in that too. So Juba is the capital, and we were hoping to do some training there, but they're not quite set up yet. Hopefully next year. I mean, we have a year's time to get even more government involvement and look for those people that we can start training. Because wherever we go, that's really our critical mission to sustainable eye care is doing that training piece.
Dr. Weber, how do you pack for a trip like this? What do you have to take along besides the basics?
Well, I pack light. My bag was about 10 kilograms, I think, total.
Charlie won the weight thing. He always came underweight.
So you pack 4 pairs of scrubs, plenty of DEET bug repellent. You only need a light sleeping sack at night. And I had about 2 pairs of pants, 2 pairs of shirts.
And your medical equipment, I mean, what do you take in your bag that way?
The medical equipment we had to bring in all on our own. We packed 2 microscopes that are able to be mounted to a table. All of our cataract surgery is done under microscopes. And then along with that, we were prepared for 300 cataract surgeries. So that means a new... it's all with knives. There's no lasers or things like that there. So we are packing every small piece from the bandages that we put on the eye at the end to the drops that we need to provide them with afterwards to all the surgical instruments, the sutures, everything. So it all in all was many, many bins of medical equipment that, and as you can imagine, traveling with that amount of equipment and passing through customs in various countries can be a challenge.
Michael Ye, how are these excursions funded? You say you've got a 5-year commitment. How are you paying for it?
Through generous donations from people. So, you know, we're a nonprofit, basically, if you think about it that way. I mean, the university is a nonprofit, but we need to generate revenue to pay for that, and that's through generous foundations and individuals and listeners on the radio. So that's how we do it. And this one's tough. This one's, we work all over Sub-Saharan Africa. We work all over in Asia. But this one's a little more challenging, just logistically moving a team of 15. You know, I think our total weight for our equipment was close to 2,000 pounds. We basically take everything to set up an OR for 2 surgeons to work side by side. So it's a lot. And to move that plus 15 people through a place, I think South Sudan, I think the statistic I saw was 30 miles of paved road in a country, in the entire country.
Oh, so, my.
Yeah. 30 miles. You know, it's like Salt Lake to Provo, and that's it. That's what you get.
Wow.
So no roads are paved. Transportation is, we have to fly everything on chartered planes.
Wow. You've done this for 2 years now. You've got 3 ahead. Any changes, any lessons that you learned from this particular trip that you hope to implement on the next time?
I think the biggest lesson is that be prepared for the things that you can never prepare for. So, you know, one of our bags for the first time didn't make it through. We had 30 plus bags, and we tried to keep track of them, had to move them through many, many different airports, and we lost one that had some critical supplies. So you end up scrambling, thinking, all right, how are we going to make sure we can do the 300 surgeries when we only have this much of X? And it was pretty impressive. We told the physicians, hey, I think we're going to run out of this, and this is something they use in every one of the surgeries. And they said, we'll be careful. Mm. You know, so you just learn to adapt, and it's hard to prepare. I thought this trip was going to be easier. It is actually more difficult this year. Even though we'd been there before, I thought, oh, we kind of have everything down. We know exactly what we need, blah, blah, blah. And you end up and go, wow, first it's unbelievably buggy and hot. And I wasn't prepared for that. I should have probably brought more stuff.
Can you go a different time of year? Or is that it? That's what it's like.
It's what it's like. We're thinking about actually moving it a little later into January. We do this the first 2 weeks of December, but largely has to deal with roads, right? So if the roads are flooded, we can't get through. And this is right at the start of the dry season, so it tended to work. But again, it makes the pre-screening. We do have one of the healthcare workers in Bor, which is a city there. He lives there. He did the pre-screening. We sent him to one of our partnering organizations in Nepal to actually get training on how to screen patients. So he travels on foot, but he would send me these emails like, it's 11 hours on foot to this village because the water's up to my thigh.
Gosh.
And we're like, oh, that's just awful. So if we could maybe push it back 2 weeks, we might do that. That might be something that will be helpful.
We've only got a minute or so left, but Dr. Weber, I'm just wondering how this excursion is changing the way that you practice medicine here. You entered this as a learning experience. What have you learned, and how is it changing what you do?
Well, it definitely gives a perspective on the breadth of care that a physician, and in particular an ophthalmologist, can provide for patients, both here in the United States and abroad. And I think each patient you can learn something from as a physician, which is the great part of medicine, and that's not any different there or it is here in the United States. And each patient deserves the utmost attention of the physician and has different needs. So even though these were South Sudanese blind patients coming to us that we can restore their vision, it's no different than the person that has difficulty functioning here in the United States, and everyone can receive the highest level of care regardless of how remote they are in the world.
Probably gives you a greater appreciation for the clean operating room you have to work in, and your tools and the lasers and all that.
Yeah, a little bit different in the climate controlled environment at the Moran compared to the non climate controlled, aside from a small fan in the corner of the 100 degree heat in South Sudan.
Dr. Charles Weber, he's a fellow at the Moran Eye Center here in Salt Lake City. Dr. Weber, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
And Michael Ye, manager of the Moran International Division. Michael, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And good luck with your continued work. Coming up next, students and social entrepreneurship. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City.